Welcome back to the podcast, where this podcast is talking about how to look like a NBA playoff expert in under, I think I said 45 minutes, but there's no guarantees here, you know? But we'll try our best. So I'm going to split this into two. It's one podcast, but two parts. So this first part will be on the West teams, and then the second on the East. I know game... As of today, which in Philippine time is April 18, Monday, the first game of all the series have been played. And so I'll give my reactions to that and kind of things you can say to look like you understand basketball, things you should know, and, you know, just some baseline things. So let us start with teams 1 and 8. Which is the first seed and the eighth seed. So the way the playoffs work are there's teams from the first seed and the eighth seed. So the first seed is the best seed. Eighth seed is the worst. So only 8 out of 15 teams in a conference play in the playoffs. So two conferences, the West and the East, 16 teams, boom. So first seed will always play the worst seed. So it's first seed versus eighth seed, second seed versus seventh, third seed versus sixth, and fourth seed versus fifth. All the games are best first to four, so it's best of seven series. And that's kind of just based on what you need to know. Now let's get on to Phoenix versus New Orleans. This first section is about Western Conference teams. So, as you know, I probably have a massive bias against the Pelicans, big Suns fan. So I will try not to be biased, but it's gonna come out, guys. So the Suns are the best team in the NBA, record-wise. The Suns ended with, what was their record then this year? Standings, 64-18. And they are led by Devin Booker, who you might know for dating Kendall Jenner, or for his basketball skills. Just depends on what you're into. They're led by him, Chris Paul, who's, you know, mostly known for being great friends with LeBron, but also a very good basketball player in his own right. No disrespect to him, but, you know, that's how I first knew about him. And DeAndre Ayton, who was their first pick a few years back. The Suns team is super deep. They have three people who are in the final candidates for most improved, for Sixth Man of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, and Coach of the Year, which that shows both their depth and the strength of this team. This team has a lot going for it, and that monster of Booker, Chris Paul, and Ayton with a great supporting cast, killer. Now we're on to the Pelicans. Yeah. So, the Pelicans, they ended this year 36-46. They are a threat. And what makes them a threat is, so the NBA implemented a play-in. So seeds 6 or 7 through 10. So let's say they're right before, it's just 1 through 8. Wherever you place, if it's 15 teams in a conference, if you place 9, you're not in the playoffs. You place 10th, you're not in. It's 1 through 8. But about 2 years ago, or 2 or 3 years ago, the NBA implemented a play-in tournament so that if you place 10th in the NBA in your conference standings, you still have a chance at the playoffs. You just need to win the play-in series. And so they want two games to qualify for themselves for the playoffs. They are led by, most people probably know that team for the team that Zion Williamson's on. He's injured, so let's go. That's big. But they're led by Brandon Ingram, former Laker. CJ McCollum, both awesome scorers, and Jonas Valanciunas, who great big in his own right, but in today's NBA, he's a lot less valuable. So, that's kind of the baseline information about who are the best players, what you kind of need to know. Now we'll go a little more in-depth. So, that introduction is so, like, when people you're around are talking about it, you're like, oh, I know this. Christian's podcast, you know what? I'm an expert now. But this is just a baseline. I'm going to give a baseline then a more expert analysis on it. So hopefully you watch this before the next game happens, game two. So for the Suns series versus the Pelican, here are the things you can say as a fan from either side. So firstly, if you're a Suns fan, here are things to make you look like, whoa, they know their team. They are like, wow. So first thing you can talk about is, wow. Like, you can say it, wow, that was a great game from DeAndre Ayton. He played a wonderful game with multiple block shots, great defense, and that kind of goes around that whole team. And so you could say it like, wow, like before the game, this Suns team, that defense is deep. Ayton, and, you know, to look a little smarter, because this is such a baseline thing that it looks like you could. You can talk about Mikal Bridges. So Mikal Bridges is their defensive player of the year candidate. And you can talk about, wow, he's guarding their best player, who I mentioned, the Pelicans' best player, Brandon Ingram, really well. Hopefully, we got to see this matchup between these two guys, because that's the key for the series. And people are going to be like, wow, you know, he or she, or they, you know your stuff. Then another thing you can say, if you're talking with people who are Suns fans about the series, you can talk about the matchup with Devin Booker and Herb Jones. Herb Jones is a rookie, very good defender. He is very young, of course, as I said, he's a rookie. And so you can talk about that matchup. Whoa, this Herb Jones kid. I'm a lot younger than Herb Jones, but this Herb Jones, can he stop Devin Booker? Game one proved that he couldn't. But can he stop him? That's a big question. And that is something you can ask. Now, from a Pelicans perspective, they lost game one by 11 points. It's closer than I thought it'd be. And you can ask, so Jonas today, Jonas Valanciunas, center I brought up, set a franchise record for rebounds. And what you can bring up is that, whoa, game two, we got to look at that rebound battle. We got to see, you know, maybe the rebounds can favor the Pelicans. And, you know, this playoffs is a lot about grit and grind. And so that might be a big thing. And so you talk about the rebound battle. And whoa, people are like, wow, they know their stuff. Next thing you can talk about is, excuse me, how well will CJ McCollum play? I know it's a very basic thing, but you can bring up, he played 43 minutes and the whole game is 48. So you can talk about, whoa, slow down. CJ McCollum is having to play 43 minutes. And if this keeps on happening, will this team even have a chance? Their lack of depth is going to kill them, because Suns are playing their stars. Devin Booker is playing two less minutes, but other Sun stars are playing a lot less than what this Pelicans team is needing to play their stars. And you can talk about their reliance on it. So, boom. Look like an expert. Next, for the West, the Grizzlies and the Timberwolves. So, Grizzlies versus Timberwolves. Let's start with the Grizzlies. They were the second best team in the NBA. They went 56-26, pretty good. And they are led by possible MVP candidate, but wasn't selected, and finalist for most improved player, Ja Morant. Very good, super athletic. Just search him on YouTube. So many great clips. Then they're also led by Desmond Bane, who is another player who's been considered for most improved. Breakout year for him, scoring really well and doing a lot. Then they have a great supporting cast with guys like Dylan Brooks, Jaren Jackson, Brandon Clark, Steven Adams, and more. So the main guys you can focus on are Ja Morant, who everyone knows about, and Desmond Bane, who he got the third most minutes on the team behind Ja Morant and Dylan Brooks. And those three are kind of the lead guards for this team. Next, the Timberwolves. They ended this year 46-36, but they are a super young and very strong team. They have two first picks in Anthony Edwards, balling out. He's a stud. Anthony Edwards, and he's a shooting guard, super awesome scorer. Karl Anthony Towns, one of the most skilled bigs, and another first round pick, D'Angelo Russell, who was what pick? He was the second pick. They have pick one. They have picks one and two from the same draft and pick one from another draft. This is a super young team with a lot of talent. So, let's talk about kind of the base thing about these two teams. So, Memphis has been doing great this year. There's kind of a breakout year for this team. And as a whole, they've been playing really well. This monster, Ja Morant, with a great supporting cast, has led to them getting to this point. For the Timberwolves, it's been a rocky road, but their winning season is mainly due to how well they score. They're scoring. They have so many people who can score. Even some of these guys, who I'll bring up in a bit, who don't kind of pop up into your head immediately, they're scoring too. This team is deep with a lot of shot creators and a lot of people who can score. Game one, Memphis lost by 13. It's crazy. This is a very crazy high-scoring game. And so here's what you can bring up for game two and kind of also following games. Base thing you can say is, from as a Grizzlies fan, if you're telling people that, you can bring up, whoa, Steven Adams, he's their starting center, scored 0 points. How can this be the case? Your center can't be scoring 0 points. This shouldn't happen. How can he match up against one of the best bigs in the game, Karl Anthony Towns, mobility-wise? Karl Anthony Towns is one of the more mobile bigs, and Steven Adams has always been known as a more traditional big. He doesn't move as well. He moves pretty well for a big, don't get me wrong, but there are bigs who can move better than him. And so how will he match up in the following games? Next thing you can bring up, this was one of Ja's first game back, possibly his first game back since his injury, and he played awesome. But what is the Grizzlies' record without him? Record without Ja Morant. Let's find out. It's super good for some reason. They have a 0.8 win rate. So at 8 in every 10 games, they win without Ja Morant. They beat the Phoenix Suns, who I talked about as the best team, in a pretty decent margin. Not 10 points, but a margin that it's not like just decided on a game winner. And so Memphis, without him, has played spectacular. They beat the Suns without 4 of their 5 main starters. And so, how will this team adjust back to that? How will they have that same fire and that same energy? Because those games, they're super underdog. But for the first time in a while, they're expected to do well. And will they crumble under the pressure? So you can bring that up. Then the more kind of specific thing, you can bring up D'Anthony Melton. He's a bench player, of course. But how well can he guard D'Angelo Russell? D'Angelo Russell did not have a great game. He had a pretty decent one. 10 points, 9 assists. And so, how will he make it hard for both D'Angelo Russell to score, but also for him to make plays for his teammates? The main thing is, so how many people scored over 20 points? 3 people scored over 20 points for the Timberwolves, while only 2 people scored over 20 points for the Grizzlies. How can you make it so that he can't set up his team? Talk about that. Boom. Look smart. Awesome. Because you are smart. Next, for the Timberwolves perspective, most basic thing you can talk about, Anthony Edwards. Monster performance in his first playoff game. And you can bring up, whoa, can he keep this pace up? He's playing really well. He played really well, but can he keep doing it? I don't know. Maybe he could. Next thing you can talk about is, how can the Grizzlies stop Anthony Edwards, Karl Anthony Towns, and D'Angelo Russell? Three people who are either picks one or two. That's crazy. How can you stop that? And so you can talk about how good that is, how good they are, and how can they stop them? How can the Grizzlies stop them? Now for the more kind of specific one, Malik Beasley. He scored 23 in this game and is a knockdown shooter. Talking about his shooting and his presence on the court is a key thing because he's kind of that like secret fourth member that not a lot of people talk about, but he's so good. He can't ever, I don't know if he'll ever be the best player on the team, maybe even, not even second. But when he's put at fourth because of three other guys being, well, studs, he can do a lot of damage. And so how can the Grizzlies cover that? Boom. Next team done. Time for 3 versus 6. The Warriors versus the Nuggets. These teams are a little more well-known, at least I would say the Warriors are a little more well-known. Oh, wait. Let me look at the box score up. Warriors, Nuggets. Okay, so. Basics about the Warriors. They are led by Steph Curry. First unanimous MVP in the league, balling out. Has only come back from injury now, so, you know, could be a little rusty. Game one kind of showed that, but they had another star who carried. Klay Thompson, very well known. Draymond Green. All players that general NBA fans know. If you're not one of those people. Klay Thompson, great shooting guard. Also just came back from injury a few months back and we'll be kind of talking about, not his replacement, but someone who's taking a few of his minutes. Not a few, a good chunk. And Draymond Green, he's kind of known as a jack of all trades. He's able to do a lot of things on the court for this team. He's the leader for this team, I'd say. And of course, the player who should be most improved player, but NBA's just being dumb. Jordan Poole, balling out right now. Another guard, plays the same position as Klay, but is balling out right now. He's playing some of the best basketball of his career and has made big strides. And probably, I'd say, the second best player on this team behind Steph. It's not Klay, guys. It's Jordan Poole. Now, for the Nuggets. The Nuggets are an injury-riddled team. Without their two second and third best players, who are Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., don't need to talk about them because they're not playing. They have MVP candidate Nikola Jokic with a cast of good but not great talent. So, for this team, all you really need to know is Nikola Jokic, and then we'll talk more about the players around him a little later. He's everything to this team. He is the carry, and I don't know how the Warriors won 53-29. The Nuggets only won 5 less games. Their team is a 1 superstar team. This Warriors team, you could say 2 or 3. The team difference is high, and it showed in game one where the Warriors dominated. Now, let's get into the nitty-gritty. So, what'll be important for game two? Steph. He played probably the lowest minutes he's played in a while at 22 minutes. Because his teammates are playing so well. And so, what will we see in game two? Will Steph be needed to play more minutes? Or will his, I would still say supporting cast as he's the best player, but his kind of superstar co-mates, will they be able to carry the load again? That's kind of a general take. Now into the more nitty-gritty. How will they be able to stop both? How will they change up their game plan for both Jordan Poole and Klay Thompson, who are both very different players who play the same position? Jordan Poole, very well known for his shot creation ability and known for being able to make his own plays. Klay is more corner, move off ball, get the ball, shoot threes, bing, bang, bong. And both of them can kind of do the other person's role in catch and shoots and scoring off the dribble, but that's... They both have their bread and butters. So, how will the Nuggets be able to adapt? Boom. Base takes. Now for the Nuggets. Firstly, where will they find help against this Warriors team? Because Nikola Jokic will play his heart out, but who will help? In game one, it was Will Barton as another supporting cast player, role player, but, you know, he has spurts. He scored 24 points, but was it enough? No. And the main issue is, it comes with the fact, how many double-digit scores did the Warriors have in comparison to the Nuggets? How many did the Warriors have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They had 6. The Nuggets had 4. They had 4 players who didn't score. Oh, they had 4 players who scored over 10 points, who scored in double digits. That can't happen. Next thing, the defensive matchups. They are nightmares for this team. No one on this team is really good enough on ball to guard Steph, maybe Monty Morris, but on the shooting guard position, all of these people can't guard Steph, Klay, nor Jordan Poole. Who will they get to guard him? How will they find someone to guard them? Because right now, it looks dire right now. This team doesn't have anyone who can really guard those spots. Who can guard that specific spot. Because if they can't find it, then the 2 shooting guards combined for 49 points. They ball it out. So, what are you going to do? Boom. Next West, final West matchup. The Mavericks versus the Jazz. The Mavericks were 52-30. The Jazz were 49-33. Mavericks. Okay. So, the Mavericks. We're going to first talk about Luka Doncic. We're going to talk about his injury soon, but he is the key to this team. He is always every year at this point, a possible MVP candidate for how well he's playing and how good he is. His supporting cast is a lot of guards, actually. Jalen Brunson and Spencer Dinwiddie, both elite guards in their own right. Not all-star, but like they'd make a team like best players who didn't make the all-star team. Those two are balling out. And with the rest of the supporting cast of role players who played really well in the last game, which we'll talk about. Then, for the Jazz, they are led by Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley Jr., and Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert, best known for his defense, and Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley are kind of this 1-2 punch on offense. Another person I want to mention, Jordan Clarkson, Filipino, represent, but probably one of the best six men, as he is a spark off the bench who is capable of scoring 40 points on any given night. Doesn't do it often, but, you know, it's a possibility. So, Mavericks. Most basic take you can have on it is, how will they play without Luka? Because game one, they almost beat the Jazz, only a 6-point loss, without their best player. And so, can they replicate it and play maybe just a teeny bit better to get them over the hump? Or can they even stay in the series long enough? Because with Luka's ankle injury, it is almost confirmed he can't play tomorrow. How much longer will this last? Because this team could fall apart before he even gets a chance to play. Now, a more specific takes. How will they run? How will they have any depth? Because right now, they have how many players? They have 4 players playing over 36 minutes. They had how many players in this rotation? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 8 player rotation with 1 person playing 10 minutes, 1 person playing 18. So I'd say like real rotations, 6. 6 or fine, 7 players who are playing. That is going to be hell, especially if they have to retry this tomorrow. And so how will they be able to kind of play their bench more, and how will they set their bench up for success? Because the starters are playing overtime and they won't last against this Jazz team who are playing, who only have two people playing over 40 minutes while the rest of their team is, well, able to play less than that. And how many players did they have in rotation? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 9 to 10 people consistently in rotation. This team will not last. This Mavericks team will not last. Now onto a specific player for this Mavericks team. How will Reggie Bullock kind of have his impact? Last game, he played 44 minutes, and 15 points is fine, but he needs to step up, as he is probably the premier, second best, or even second, or possibly even best shot creator that's left. So, how will he be able to create his own shot, and how will he, well, be able to score for this team? Now for the Jazz. For them, it's more not putting so much pressure on themselves. How can they keep cool, as they, of course, are the better team when the Mavericks don't have their best player? So how will they leverage it once again for game two? Next, Bojan Bogdanović had a really good year, but how will he impact the game again? He had a big 26-point game in game one. And so will he be able to have a good night also? Because the Mavericks, great all-around team game. For the Jazz, it was a two-headed monster. Four people scored in double digits for the Jazz. How many people scored in double digits for the... Five people for the Mavs. I know it's a one-player difference, but it's two players who scored over 20 points for the Jazz, while in the Mavericks, there are four people who scored over 15. It's a lot more consistency as a whole unit, and so the Jazz are so reliant on these two. So, in game two, how will it change? What will happen? Now onto a specific player. How will Jordan Clarkson play in game two? He only scored 10 points in his 20 minutes. He played a lot less minutes than usual because of the intensity of this game. But will we see more of him? Because on this Mavericks team, he has a lot of great matchups and a lot of switches he can get to that I would say are favorable. And so how will they be able to deal with that? And will he be able to play more? So that's it for the first segment on the Western Conference. And now it's time for the East. So, yeah. Welcome back after we talked about the Western teams. Now to get onto the East. NBA play. Let me look at the bracket. So, one seed versus eight. The Miami Heat and the Atlanta Hawks. Love the Miami Heat Instagram page. That is a fun Instagram page. So, let's first talk about the Heat. The Heat standings, let's look at them, went 53-29. The Hawks were the worst team in the East, who they're playing against, and they went 43-39. So, the Heat, base information, best players Jimmy Butler, followed by a lot of great supporting cast members, a lot of players like Bam Adebayo, who could be considered the best player, but just depends, Kyle Lowry, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, and a bunch of other guys who kind of help out. But those are the people you hear of the most. So, for the Hawks, their best player is Trae Young. Balls out, but had a really crap game. Talk about that soon. And so, they're led by him, with their best kind of players outside of him being Bojan Bogdanović, Kevin Huerter, Onyeka Okongwu, John Collins, DeAndre Hunter. Those guys are all kind of that make up the Hawks' identity. So, I'm sorry, but for the Heat, some base notes. Firstly, you can talk about just the general great play of this whole team, but especially Duncan Robinson. In 23 minutes, he scored 27 points. He balled the heck out. He played awesome. So we can talk about, will he have a game like this he seems a little inconsistent at times, but when he has games like this, it kind of reminds you of how well he, how good he is. Next, kind of a more specific thing, you can talk about the matchup of how well they can guard Trae Young. At the guard position, Kyle Lowry is a great defender, even though he's a little older. But on switches, they are super mobile. You can talk about everyone on the team, maybe outside of like Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson, can guard those guys. You can see Jimmy Butler, if he guards Trae Young, easy. PJ Tucker, role player for the Heat, guards him, easy. Bam Adebayo, very mobile also. This whole team can guard him, so what can he do? Now onto a specific player, but a more like kind of less appreciated player. We'll go on to PJ Tucker again. 16-point outing in 24 minutes for a role player, it's great. But defensively, his capabilities, if he's able to guard the great wing players of this Hawks team, they are shut down. Because if Trae Young doesn't have a big night, which they can, I wouldn't say easily, but we're able to stop, this team will fall apart. And PJ Tucker will thrive when if Trae Young is cold and the other forwards have to try to make plays, that's when he can thrive and show off his defensive prowess. Now, on to the... I'm sorry, I'm listening to music also, of course. Now for the Hawks. Of course, the base thing you can talk about is Trae Young. He played like crap. That's all I can say. He did not play good. So what can they do game two to get him an easier time? How can you make it easy for him? Next thing, who will guard Jimmy Butler? John Collins is probably the guy I'd say, but he's a power forward. None of these wing players are especially great defenders. DeAndre Hunter, I think he's pretty decent, but none of these players can guard Jimmy Butler well enough. The Heat, I can name multiple people who can guard Trae Young. This Hawks team, I just don't know who. So you can bring it up. Guys, who can guard this Jimmy Butler? Huh? And you don't need to cite me. You just look really smart. Next thing. More specific thing. Or kind of the big, like our kind of spotlight for a player. Onyeka Okongwu. I love Onyeka Okongwu. I'm a big Onyeka Okongwu fan since high school. His high school years. I'm in high school right now. How will he make an impact on the game? Bam Adebayo, both him and Onyeka had pretty just offensively poor outings, but they're known for their defense. And so how will Onyeka be able to affect drives? Because 115-91, the Heat were shredding on drives because they didn't need to rely on their three, except Duncan Robinson. He is a three-point specialist. And so how can Onyeka affect the game as he is one of the youngest players on this team? And so how can he affect it, and how will he step up to the plate? Next series, 2-7. Nets versus Celtics. Darling. I'm just singing this song. So, very entertaining game, but let's first give the base stats about these two teams. The Celtics won 51-31 this season, while the Nets won 44-38. The Celtics, their team is led by kind of this two-headed monster at shooting guard and small forward with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Their role players are also great, with Al Horford and Marcus Smart being the kind of, like, they're good. Al Horford was an all-star at one point, but good but not great. Now, for the Nets, it's some base information about them. They are a two-headed monster. Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, Kyrie will both go down as some of the greatest shot creators in the history of the NBA. And they also have a decent core of role players. So, Celtics, let's get into the base things. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown combined for a total of, how many points? Math, 54 points. and they had four people who scored over 20 points, which is really solid. So, player will at spotlight, Jason Tatum. Wonderful outing. He did play 48 minutes, but 45 minutes. Minutes are going up this playoffs because, you know, do or die basketball. And so he had a monstrous performance. And so how will he play in the next game? Because this was a shocker. I did not expect. The Celtics are, of course, the second seed, but I did not expect them to kind of win in the clutch because the Nets have some of the, we'll bring it up, but in short, the Nets have some of the best late game players and some of the clutchest players. And this young Celtics team were able to rise up. Next point, how will the Celtics play when their role players don't step up? So I brought up Al Horford and Marcus Smart. And I said already, four people had 20-point games. But outside of those four 20-point players, everyone else on the team scored 7 points or less. And so I don't expect Marcus Smart and Al Horford to score 20 points every single game. And so where will they find that scoring again? Because Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown both had wonderful games. But it was Al Horford and Marcus Smart having 40 points combined, two role players that really put them over the edge. So where will they find that consistent third man? Because now we're going to go into a specific player, Derek Wyatt, who they picked up earlier in the year at the trade deadline, scored 7 points, and he's the one expected to score. So how will he step up in future in this series so that the Celtics can find consistent wins? Because I don't know if this is sustainable for this team to expect Al Horford and Marcus Smart to combine for 40 points. It shouldn't be. Now for the Nets. I know a lot of people might give hate on this comment, but Kevin Durant did not have a great game. And I know it's like, oh, if you just look at the box score, he had 23 points. But let's look at his ESPN. And SBB again is percentage. Where is it? Points, full team stats. Stats, box score. KD was 9 of 24. 9 of 24. It's funny also, he missed one free throw. One free throw and they lost by 1 point. Good one, right? I'm sorry, but your best player, your pretty much MVP of this team, cannot be 9 of 24. That is a massive underperformance, and we'll need to see a better game from him from game two if this Nets team wants to turn it around. And I know I talked about how unsustainable it is for these role players on the Celtics to score 40 points combined, and you might be thinking, I'll bring it up. Kyrie Irving scored 39 points, almost 40 points on his own. And you're like, oh, that's unsustainable. This guy has all the pressure on him. And so I think that he will step up. I think that 39 may not be reliable, but he could average 35 points this whole series. So I think he is solid, great. And I think that he will kind of have to carry this team if KD's not playing like that. But you cannot expect this team to win when KD shoots that crap. Next, a base thing for them. Who will guard Jaylen Brown? Or sorry, not Jaylen Brown. Jason Tatum. Because they have one really good wing defender in Bruce Brown Jr., one of their role players. But who will guard the other? Because KD's good. Don't get me wrong. His length defensively puts him in a great spot. But he's not the defender that they can't interchange with Jaylen Brown and Tatum as well. Because if they do, the other will just dominate. Tatum dominated today, but Jaylen Brown can have his pop-off game the next game because of these matchups. And so how will you play it out defensively? Now on to kind of the premier player. Not the premier player, but kind of a player I want to shout out to. Goran Dragic. So for this Nets team, Goran is, of course, a bench player. But he had a great game. 6 of 11 field goal is not the most amazing in the world, but 14 points, 5 rebounds, an assist. he played really well all around. And so he's honestly quite a good player. And so you can expect to see more of him, more playing time for him because of how well he played this game. And 14 points in 26 minutes, that's solid. He's playing good minutes and making big plays. And as a veteran on this team, he can do a lot. And I know a little more because, you know, I think that this team is so interesting. They have LaMarcus Aldridge and Blake Griffin, two forwards who used to be amazing. But they're getting DNPs due to coach decision. And so will Steve Nash, big Steve Nash fan, 7 seconds or less, but him as a coach, he needs to change it up against this team. And Blake and LaMarcus might be the change up they're looking for. And LaMarcus had a pretty decent stretch of games before he got benched. And he's playing pretty well, scoring 13 points, 5.5 rebounds, and an assist per game. That's solid. That is really solid. And so will we get to see him? Now, for seed 3 versus 6, Bucks-Bulls. Let's go to Bucks-Bulls. Bucks-Bulls. Box score. So, standings-wise, the Bucks were 51-31. The Bulls were 46-36. Only 5-game difference. So, who are the main players for the Bulls? Yeah, up for the Bucks. Fine, let's start with the Bucks. Their team. Giannis Antetokounmpo. Or Giannis Antetokounmpo. You can't bring up this Bucks team without him. League MVP. Finals MVP. He dominated today. And he is awesome. But it's also his three-headed supporting cast. The three main supporting cast members, and Chris Middleton, who was an all-star in his own right, so second best player, Drew Holiday, great shot creator himself, and Brook Lopez, those four kind of make up the main team of players that you kind of know, with a bunch of other great role players in the mix. Now for the Bulls, they are a three-headed monster. I'd say their best player would be DeMar DeRozan, but in close second, tied for second, I'd say. Nikola Vucevic and Zach LaVine, those three make up a really solid squad. With Alex Caruso as the GOAT there, too. GOAT is a joke, but, you know, it's funny because, you know, he is the GOAT. The next MJ. Now, let's talk about the Bucks, kind of their keys and the most basic things. So, first basic thing we can talk about, Giannis having a stellar game. 27 points, 16 rebounds, 3 assists. He played spectacular. That is the basis. You can just talk about it. Oh, Giannis had a great game one. Super basic thing. Now into the more kind of nitty and gritty. So, Chris Middleton. You can talk about, oh, Chris Middleton, he didn't play that great game one. He had 7 turnovers. Jeez, I did not even realize. Your second best player cannot have 7 turnovers. And so that's why I'd say this game is close. Also another reason. But this game was really close. And so your second best player cannot have 7 turnovers. That really just can't happen. And his percentages. He's known as a 3-point shooter. He can't go 1-for-7. And so how will Chris Middleton bounce back? Next, as a more general thing for this team, who can guard Nikola Vucevic? Because Brook is a great defender in his own right. But I think that matchup-wise, Nikola has a lot of strengths into him. I know you may disagree, but my opinion on it is I think Nikola has a lot of advantages. And today it showed, having a 24-point outing on Brook Lopez. And so I think he's easily able to abuse his matchup. And so who will step up as another guy who can guard him? Because I feel like there's a lot of pressure needed to guard him, and it could lead to other Bulls players being open. And I know I spotlighted two of the players on the Bucks, but now I'm going to do like a another spotlight and put it on Javon Carter, former Phoenix Sun. And why I say him is because obviously he only played 10 minutes, but on this Bucks team, there's only one guy, a few guys who I think can really guard Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan. And I think Javon can really guard those guys. Size-wise, he's about 6'2", 6'1", 6'3". I don't know, okay. But he's not the height of Zach LaVine nor DeMar. But I think that his hustle, his effort, he's able to keep up with those guys. So I think that it's important. We could see him a lot more in the series, depending on if players get hot and, you know, he could stop them. The Bulldog. I don't know, it's a weird name, but that's what they call him, the Bulldog. Now, for the Bulls. First takeaway is, DeMar cannot play 43 minutes and score 18 points. Your best player cannot go 6 for 25. Oh my goodness. Because 6 for 25, geez. He cannot go 6 for 25. Like, that can't happen. And so, that is an issue. You can't have your best player doing 6 for 25. And on the Nikola thing, I talked about the matchup. I know he went 9 for 27, but I think it's just such an abusable matchup. And he went 2 for 10 from 3, okay? You know, that percentage really dipped into the field goal percentage. But I think that in the post, he can still dominate. But DeMar, 6 for 25, that cannot happen as your best player. He is so good, and that just cannot happen. Your two best players cannot combine for Zach. I'm talking about Zach LaVine and DeMar. Your two guards who lead this team cannot combine for 12 for 44. 12 for 44 in percentage. That's 27.2727. So let's just round that to 27%. Or fine, we can round up 28%. You cannot have your two best players combined for 28%. That just can't happen. And this game was close, which is a shocker because of that. Shocker, a lot. Both teams played not great. So that's kind of a basic thing to talk about. Wow, their best players can't shoot this badly. Next, a little more bias on my part, but I think that obviously you could talk about the missed call. Giannis at 2 minutes. Could have been called for a foul, but was called on another player named Patrick Willis of the Bulls on a rebound. And so you can talk about, whoa, that call could have changed that game. Because Giannis, 6 fouls is out. So if you have 5 fouls, you get your 6, you're out of the game. He was on 5. And so, whoa, what if he fouled out? Could that have changed the game? And that was only a 3-point game at that point. I think the Bulls were down 3. They could have been up 3. I don't know. Okay, I wasn't watching the game. But from what I've heard, and so that moment could have changed the game. And you can talk about that. Now to the specific player for the Bulls. The specific player I want to talk about is Alex Caruso. Because he is the only guy I think can try to guard Giannis. Because they have Patrick Willis, who's a big guy. But I don't think he can keep up. But Alex Caruso, obviously height-wise, he is not as tall as Giannis, but I think athleticism-wise, he can kind of keep up. And I think he's a very smart defender. Excuse me. And that can make a big difference. Final teams. Orleans. Now on to what is it? The Sixers. Gotta play that Sixers basketball. The Sixers and the Raptors. So, where is it? Sunday. There you go. Box score. So, the Sixers were 51-31. The Raptors were 48-34. This was the 4th place versus 5th place game. So, for the 76ers, they are led by the two-time machine, Joel Embiid, being probably, he scored the most points in the league this year, averaging 30 points a game, with James Harden as his second in command. Two best players, but also players like Tobias Harris and Danny Green being great role players to step up at times. But Tyrese Maxey scored 38. Their rookie is Tyrese Maxey isn't a rookie, but I think he's in his second year. He had a great first year, but yeah, second year. He's playing really well. And so he's a player to watch out for. We'll talk about him soon. And for the Raptors, unexpected, like this team has always been. Since the departure of Kawhi a few years back, this team has not always been expected to do great. But with players like Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby leading the charge, but also their new player, their newest draft pick, Scotty Barnes, who I think should be Rookie of the Year. He's balled out. And this team, awesome all around. So, first takeaway for the Sixers. Tyrese Maxey, 38 points in 38 minutes. Awesome game. But Harden and Joel Embiid only combined to score 41. Your two best players? That's a little scary. And so, what will happen in game two? Because I'm not expecting Tyrese Maxey to score 38 again. Who will also step up? Because Tyrese Maxey and another role player I brought up, Tobias Harris, they combined for, 64 points. And those are the two role players. They stepped up, but will it happen again? I'm not sure about that. And so how will they play in game two? And how will Joel Embiid and James Harden play? Because this team is solid. Don't get me wrong, but I don't know if that's sustainable to expect two role players. Maxey, I could be a star, but right now, you don't expect that. Now, next thing for the Sixers. Who will guard Pascal Siakam? He scored 24 in game one, but he takes 18 shots. But he's not so ball dominant like other stars. I'd say he is ball dominant, but who will guard him? Because I really don't see anyone on the Sixers team keeping up with him. Tobias Harris is a solid power forward, but not of the same height as Siakam. And so who will consistently guard him? And will Siakam take advantage? Because he's an aggressive player, but not as aggressive as some other players in matchups like this. And so he will need to play a lot more aggressive to make this work. Final thing for the Sixers. He hasn't played the series, but Paul Millsap, he, I think, could guard him. Maybe not for the longest stretch, but for a few, maybe 2 or 3 minutes, you could have him on, and I think Paul Millsap's experience can really help. Champion, all-star. Wait, has he been champion? He's a champion to me, but he's a great player, and I think he can really step up in that matchup. Now, for the final part on the Raptors. So, most basic thing I can say is that Scotty Barnes, obviously, he injured his ankle. So, what will happen in game two? With an injured ankle, that will be a massive issue. And so, he's not expected to play. And how will the Raptors adjust? Next thing would be, on this team, same kind of issue. Who guards Joel Embiid? I know he may have not balled out today when he played, but Pascal Siakam, I think he's fine into him, but not great. I would not say he's the answer. And so how will this Raptors team guard him? Because this series, you're playing against one of the best bigs in the league, and this first game, you're not getting that every game. That Joel Embiid is not, you're not getting someone who's just scoring 18 points. He will score 30 on you on multiple games in a row if it's only Pascal. Someone needs to step up. Now, final player spotlight would be Gary Trent Jr. Pretty decent role player who can have outbursts of great scoring, but he can't go 2 for 11. That can't happen. And once he's taken 11 shots, once he's taken like 9 and he's 2 for 9, That is a big issue. And so how will he play and how will the rest of his team play? And so, yeah, that's it for this NBA podcast. It's a lot. We'll probably have another reacting to the end of this playoffs or maybe even for the finals. So, yeah, I'm quite sleepy right now. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Peace out, Wingangers. And yeah, I guess.